Welcome to the Playing Injured podcast, where we have conversations that help people turn their adversity into their advantage. Welcome, and I don't want to say another episode. This is a special episode, in my opinion, because it's been a few years since I've done an in-person podcast, but I have the founder of Humans First, Rob Krechek. Mm-hmm. I got it right.
You did. Yeah, nice.
I love it. So, giving some background, and man, me and you were supposed to do this podcast maybe a few weeks ago online through Zoom. Found out that you were in Chicago and I was in Chicago, and we were like, man, let's rain check this. Let's get together. It'll be great as far as Humans First goes, but also too, just to actually get some face-to-face time. Yeah. It's something that I've been actually craving, and I didn't realize I was craving it until we actually set this up. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Josh. Super grateful for the opportunity for you guys to chat with you. And thank you to your brother, Jordan, for doing the video as well. Really excited to do this in person. This is my first podcast in person also. And I mean, I feel like it does fit pretty well with the Humans First theme to be in person. So I'm super excited about this.
Without a doubt. So I always love starting a podcast off with, who is Rob and how does he spend his time today?
Great question. Who am I? Well, I would like to think that I am on this earth to act with a lot of intentionality and a lot of purpose. Like, I'm here to do something specific. And to me, that's help the world understand how technology impacts mental health, relationships, and productivity at work. And so I spend my days trying to think of ways that I can help humanity do that. But the other part of my life that I think is even more important is that during that process, I still am going to try to be the best husband, father, and friend that I can to all those in my life. And I wouldn't sacrifice any amount of success if I didn't or wasn't able to maintain the relationships in my life that I want to, and, you know, to be a play a meaningful life or role in the lives of the other people that I care about.
I love that. And I guess that goes hand in hand, right? Is kind of the mental health aspect of learning more about technology and how that can improve our life and our relationships, I think, as well. So I feel like it goes hand in hand, but also too, I just love the fact that somebody that is successful, that's thriving, thinks about family first.
Yeah, I really credit a lot of that to my parents. I grew up in a Midwestern town of, my parents are from a town of 2,500 people, right? And I, you know, so Big Bend, Wisconsin, ironically, it's one of the smallest cities, you know, it should be called Little Bend, right? But I think that, you know, my parents just set such a good example for me, and they were so loving and supportive and caring. And I'm super grateful to them because, you know, they showed me what it's like to, you know, really be there for someone. And it's not just for my sister and I, it's for everyone in their life. And, you know, that's something that I really think about a lot is how great of an example they've set for us.
I love that. So, you know, I'm glad you took it there because I wanted to take it before Humans First, right? I know after college, you went to Wall Street. You are a serial entrepreneur. Talk to me a little bit about Humans First before Humans First and kind of who you were. It seemed like you were always ambitious.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, right? Because I feel like I actually, you know, my parents did such a good job of raising me, and they really gave me all the tools that I could use to be successful. But there are still some things in my life that were really difficult for me before I got a job. For instance, in high school and all throughout high school, I developed really, really bad acne. It was like a very tough time for me. It was extremely difficult. My acne was so bad that, you know, there's this medication that you can take. It's the strongest medication on the market to get rid of acne. It's called Accutane. I had to take it twice to get rid of my acne. And, you know, it was so bad that one year for my yearbook picture, I didn't even go and get my picture taken because I didn't want people to remember my face that way.
Wow.
And so, you know, that was, you know, a period where I, you know, had pretty low self-esteem and self-worth, but I didn't realize that at the time. But then when I graduated high school and ended up going to college, a couple of things happened. First, my acne cleared up, which is obviously great for me. And then I also discovered alcohol, which was a game changer. And, you know, so I ended up, you know, starting to have my self-confidence increase a little bit. Not a ton, but like...
This lubricant, social lubricant.
Right. That definitely helped, for sure. But, you know, throughout college, I, you know, ended up getting 3 degrees, and I graduated with distinction, and I ended up, you know, getting this amazing job out of college. It was pretty much like a dream job. It was a sell-side... I was a sell-side equity analyst, and I covered medical device and pharmaceutical stocks for a living. And so I would research them, make financial models, talk to the management teams, write research reports and things like that. And it was, you know, for somebody in finance, it was an incredibly, incredibly good job at a very well-respected firm. And but something happened, and it was kind of a light bulb moment for me. So when I first got my job, I was like, oh, I'm going to make this spreadsheet of all these things I want to buy, you know, all this stuff. And at the end of the first year, I didn't buy all of it, but I had bought most of it. And I, you know, kind of sat there and said to myself, huh, like I bought all this crap and I don't really feel that much happier or that much more fulfilled. And I'm like, well, what's up with that? It doesn't make sense. I thought, you know, the society tells you you're supposed to like buy all this stuff and that will make you happy. And it didn't do that for me. And so that was kind of where I had this moment where I'm like, oh, there's got to be something else to happiness other than this material objects and goods. And so I started reading, you know, that's kind of where my journey to self-improvement started.
Yeah. And what people don't realize about happiness, right? It can't come from external things. It definitely has to come from internal. And usually it comes from, like you said, developing yourself as a person or going towards a goal. And it's not necessarily getting a goal. It's actually going towards it and progressing towards it is when you really start feeling happiness and fulfillment, right?
Yeah.
And so I thought that was really interesting, but I kind of wanted to go back because we talk about playing injured and it's actually going through things, right? And you talk about being somebody that has kind of some social anxiety or being shy, low self-esteem.
I did. Yeah.
How do you go from, and I know you said, hey, you cleared up the acne and you cleared up kind of the you know, you discovered alcohol. But how do you go from somebody who has low self-esteem to somebody that gets a Wall Street job and does something pretty successful right out of school? Like, could you think back to kind of some things that kind of got you out of that low self-esteem place?
Well, it's interesting. So going back to my high school, you know, situation. I mean, I had low self-esteem for sure because of the acne, but it's really interesting that I took the trauma of the acne. And I there was two things that I used to cope with it. I really focused on getting good grades, and I ended up being valedictorian of our class of 400 kids. And then I also was really focused on physical fitness. And so every year before football, they have this football lift-a-thon, and I set the school record for the 181-pound weight class for the lift-a-thon. And I think that record might still stand today. I'm not quite sure, but last I heard, it was still there. And, you know, so like I was able to take this traumatic event and then use some positive coping mechanisms or some positive outlets to, you know, propelled me forward. And so at the end of, you know, high school, when I gave the commencement speech at our graduation, it was, dude, this was kind of crazy. So I'm literally in the middle of giving this speech to an auditorium of thousands of people. The microphone stopped working. What? Like it just cut out. And so I just started belting out my speech without the microphone. And they're like, wait a second. You're going to have to go to the other end of the auditorium. And so they set up a different microphone, but I still got through that situation okay. And so like there's all these events then that, you know, some small events and some large events that kind of gave me confidence. And again, a little bit of confidence at a time, not a lot, but it was the summation of those small events through a decade and a half that really led me to have the confidence that I have today.
Wow. So I love that because I've been in that place before. That place of using the pain and the trauma and building that emotion up to actually use it towards something positive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's a competitor. That's somebody that's like very positive. They want more. Now, it's some folks who use the trauma and they go down the other route.
Mm-hmm.
They use drugs or they get addicted to whatever the case may be, right?
Right. Yeah.
And they kind of wallow in that trauma and in that kind of depression, right? And if we could use that emotion, because it's very powerful,
mm-hmm.
right? That trauma, that pain is very powerful, where you feel like every day you are like grinding to get out of this place.
Yeah.
And I just want people to kind of hold on to that, like when you're going through something.
Here at Playing Injured, we value mental fitness and giving folks tools to persevere through anything in life. If you struggle with brain fog, fatigue, or staying focused, I want to present to you the latest biohacking tool called Magic Mind. It's an amazing productivity drink. Look, I've been drinking Magic Mind for the past few weeks, and I've noticed a difference in my level of focus, the momentum that I feel throughout the day, and it's helped me feel more successful and conquer my calendar. Magic Mind is the world's first productivity drink. It's different than an energy drink or coffee-based drink, with minimal caffeine and all natural ingredients, helping you fight off procrastination, brain fog, fatigue, and some ADD symptoms. After about 3 to 7 days of continuous use, it's easier to get into a flow state and be more productive. Magic Mind has a special offer for our listeners. Head over to www.magicmind.co/injured and use our promo code injured for 20% off. Visit www.magicmind.co/injured and use our promo code injured for 20% off.
Well, it's another thing that I should bring up is when I entered high school, I was this skinny little scrawny guy. I was 110 pounds and I don't remember my height. But I was and at that point, I hadn't really started lifting weights. So I was just this like string bean kid who entered high school and was just like a stick. And I graduated high school at about 185 pounds, you know, and 5'11", right? So like if I would have just believed the story that I was telling myself when I entered high school, like, oh, you're this skinny kid that's never going to be strong. Like I wouldn't have lifted weights and I wouldn't have come out looking like I did. And so I think it's, you know, I really think that the story that you tell yourself, whatever it is, whether it's a good story or a bad story, that story is so critical to you becoming who you really are or you could be. And so I, you know, think carefully about what I want my life story to be and how I can achieve that every day. I think about that every day. And, you know, my story has changed a lot over time and I'm continuing to craft it in a way that I believe is going to really, lead me to be hopefully even more successful in the future.
Yeah. And choosing your perspective.
Yes.
In the world, we all get an opportunity to choose our perspective, right?
Yeah. How do you frame things? When I have a setback, I always think to myself, I'm either winning or I'm learning. And in that way, really, I'm not saying I don't get discouraged sometimes. I definitely get discouraged, but, that doesn't, you know, I try to reframe it in that way that I'm learning. And then that really makes it more easy, not super easy, but more easy to deal with.
I love it. So going back to where we left off while you were telling your story about kind of, buying a bunch of things, not really feeling fulfilled, not really feeling happy. And I think in this world that we're living in, right, social media world and kind of displaying things. And I guess this is even before the social media world, where we kind of live in a state where a lot of people want to impress instead of kind of express and grow in who you are. Right. Mm. And so I want to go back to kind of your personal development journey that you were on when you weren't feeling kind of happy, weren't feeling fulfilled.
Yeah. Well, first of all, this is still a journey that I'm still on this very moment. Like I think that that's a process and not a destination. Yeah. And I think I'll for sure be doing that the rest of my life. But to me, I mean, here's the way I think about this, right? If I improve by one half of 1% every day in something, whatever it is, right? One half of 1%. By the end of a year, I am over 50, almost 50% better. And so it's like that. So that compounding over each day is incredible, right? It's incredible. And so I just want to get very slightly better in something, in anything. And I believe that if I do that over a lifetime, I mean, it's incredible where I'll end up, hopefully, right?
Right.
Sometimes one of the things actually that's really hard for me to balance is, you know, sometimes there is some value in just being present and enjoying the moment, right? So I'm always battling between myself between, should I be present and just enjoy this moment and not worry about being motivated or advancing? But then if you're only present and you're not ever driven, then you do become stagnant. Yeah. So it's finding this balance between the two, between being present and being motivated, that is sometimes difficult for me, to be honest.
I think it's difficult for a lot of people, right? Where we're always looking to grow, always thinking about our potential. Mm-hmm. And then we don't even appreciate who we are right now.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, wow, if the person from 5 years ago could have saw me now, it would be, you'd be impressed, right? He'd be like, wow, you've made it this far, right? And so we're constantly always striving. And I think, you know, it's great to have that mindset, you know, from my perspective, to be driven, to kind of have that end in mind. But things like meditation and like we talk about mindfulness, right, can help you stay present and at least remind yourself, hey, where I'm at right now is great,
mm-hmm. right? Yeah, I was recently reading about, because I have ADHD, and one of the things that they say about the ADHD mind is that because you're always just, you know, going to the next thing, right, that you as a, not me particularly, but just people in general with ADHD, they don't celebrate their wins very often. You know, they don't take a step back and be like, oh, like I accomplished all this stuff. They're just thinking, what are the five next things that I could do? But that definitely resonates with me, because I don't really stop back and be like, oh, like you accomplished all that stuff. I'm more just like, all right, what's next? And I realized that that's something that would really help me, is to, you know, just take a pause and be like, oh yeah, like you today, like you did these five things and that was a lot, even though you didn't get everything done on your to-do list, that was still a lot of stuff. And that's a good day. You know, right. Like I need to do that, I think, more often.
I'm laughing because I was talking to my brother about this. I got ADHD myself. And so I'm always moving on to the next thing, and I keep losing things. Like I lose a lot of stuff. So like I lost my house key. I told you I went to Madison last weekend.
Yeah.
I got a rental. I left my house key in the rental. I left my work laptop at work this week. I had shoes. I went to train at boxing. I left my shoes at boxing. And I'm just always moving to the next thing. And I'm like, I need to slow myself down. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting here laughing, thinking about that, because it's crazy. But humans first. What made you call it humans first?
Yeah.
Out of all things, right?
Yeah, so this, you know, I started researching this topic about 4 years ago, and I call the topic technology mindfulness, and I define technology mindfulness as being aware of the ways that you can use technology to make your life easier instead of harder, right? I'll tell you a quick story about how I kind of got into this technology mindfulness stuff. So I own some U-Break FX cell phone repair stores in Milwaukee. And I was working at one of my stores one day. It was my busiest store. And, you know, I was checking people into the store who had broken their phones. I had done that thousands of times. So this middle-aged woman comes in with her son, and I'm guessing he was probably like 15 years old. And she's literally physically shoving him up to the front counter to talk to me. And she said to her son, "Hey, Tyler, you need to tell this man what you did to your phone." And I looked at the kid, and I really felt terrible, because he could barely stammer out a sentence. He couldn't look me in the eye. He had really poor body posture. And he actually reminded me of the kid that I was in high school with the bad acne, because I really couldn't talk to people very well. I felt bad for him, but I did my best to fix his device, and we fixed it and everything went fine. And then I started paying attention. And what I realized when I paid attention is that this same scenario just kept happening over and over and over, where these parents would bring in these, you know, middle teenaged kids who could not communicate well. And then I had this aha moment. I thought to myself, well, these kids are coming in here because they're probably heavy users of technology, and they need to get their technology fixed right away when they break it, because they're like, I can't be without technology. And then I thought to myself, well, maybe it's because of the technology that they can't communicate, that they don't have good social skills. Maybe the technology is causing that. And so I was like, oh my God, if that's true, there could be so many other implications to that. So I read this book, iGen, by Jean Twenge, and she's a generational researcher, right? So she researches all these different ways that different generations are affected by different things in society. And what this book showed is that there was a substantial increase in basically almost every aspect of how teenagers functioned starting around the year 2012. Well, what happened in 2012? That was the first year that smartphone penetration reached 50% in the United States. And it was also the same year that Facebook bought Instagram and turned it into what it is today. And so there's, you know, and it would have been hard to say in 2012 that this was really happening, but it's ridiculously clear today. There's no question that technology is substantially impacting virtually every aspect of our lives, especially for kids, because they use technology so much. The statistic that I commonly cite is in America, and this is before COVID, so you can't say that this was, that COVID affected this. In America, the average person spends 12 hours and 21 minutes a day in front of screens and media. That's 3/4 of our waking life. And so, unfortunately, humans aren't first in our world anymore. And the name of my company, to answer your question, the name of my company, Humans First, is a reminder that the most happiness and meaning and joy and purpose in our lives comes from connecting with and being with other people, not from technology.
100%. That is crazy that you say that and how you came up with that. 12 hours and 21 minutes per day.
And per day, average.
That is crazy. And that's both phone and computer.
Yeah, so that's technology. All media, and roughly an hour and a half of that is radio. So let's just say it's 11 hours a day of actual screen time between TV, computer, and phone.
Right.
Which is, again, still close to 3/4 of your waking life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's crazy. Humans aren't first anymore.
No.
Right.
Well, and the thing that's really, it's like, think about this conceptually, right? So as a species, as like, if we just think about humans for a second as an animal, right? Like a very smart animal. That's really what we are. And anything that any species does, including ours, has to do one of two things. It has to either help us survive or it has to help us reproduce. And screens obviously aren't natural. Like, there is no screen in nature. And screens do not inherently help us reproduce or survive. And so if we're spending 3/4 of our time with something that doesn't help us do the two main things that our species needs to do, there probably are some pretty negative implications from that if you think about it, like just conceptually.
Right, right. And it's, you know, this reminds me, I was watching it. It's a Kanye West interview, and he said, hey, you know, your wife would probably send a picture to Instagram before she would send it to you.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, people are doing things for social media before they even want to enjoy a moment with you. And it's making me think about, hey, the things that do bring me to, you know, the most joy in life are new experiences and relationships and building those. And so the work you're doing is amazing. And so what are more concerns about technology? Right. I know, you know, hey, everything has its negatives, positives, but kind of some concerns that you've seen and I guess trending towards the future that you see in technology.
Yeah, well, so a couple of things. First of all, I just want to explain my stance on this because I don't want people to think, oh, he's so anti-technology. Yeah. So I'm a nerd, right? I will legitimately say that I built my first computer, my desktop computer, in middle school. So I love technology, and it does amazing things for humanity. It can do amazing things. So the way I describe my stance is I'm not anti-technology. I'm pro-humanity, right? But So here, if I could summarize, you know, the 100 plus books and over 2,000 articles and studies that I've read about technology mindfulness in a couple sentences, it would be this. Technology is doing two things to humanity at the same time that are both not good. It's increasing the day-to-day and sometimes minute-to-minute stress we experience, while at the same time degrading our relationships, communities, and families and bonds between people. And so why is this problematic? Well, more stress is obviously not a good thing for people. And the main way that humans deal with stress, our main coping mechanism, is our sense of social support, right? Our perceived social support. And if stress is going up and social support is going down, both of those ends of the equation are going in the wrong direction. And I truly believe that this is the root cause of not all, but a lot of the mental health crisis that we have today. We have this thing that we're doing that's stressing us out virtually every minute of every day, and then way less ability to deal with it. That's a recipe for a mental health crisis that we have.
Yeah. And it's a cycle though, because something that's stressing you out, what do you do more when you get stressed out? You get on your phone.
Exactly. And that to me is like the craziest part about it is people think, oh, I had a crappy day at work. I'm just going to go home and veg out on social media and that will make me feel better. And what's ironic is you probably do temporarily feel better, or you think you feel better when you're on it. But what you don't know is subconsciously, there are all kinds of things that we could talk about them in detail if you'd like, but there's all kinds of things that are happening to you subconsciously that are negatively impacting you and actually putting you in a negative emotional state. And so to your point, it actually makes you worse. Like it makes you think you're going to social media to feel better and you ultimately feel subconsciously worse. And then it makes you want to use social media even more, or you think
right,
you should.
Right.
And so you feel even worse. So it's kind of this downward spiral. And so like the whole point of my company, Humans First, is to help people be aware of this stuff so that they can then decide if they want to change their behavior, or if you know, how they're using technology is serving them well. Because maybe you think that it serves you well, or maybe you don't. I don't know. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to provide information to you so you can decide how you want to change your life, if at all.
Yeah. Near Evol, you know him, right? Mm-hmm. He wrote Indistractable.
And
he also
hooked.
Wrote Hooked, right? And so it's two ends of the spectrum, right? How attention is kind of like the moneymaker. Getting our attention is the moneymaker for companies, but also on the other end, us as consumers, our ability to focus is kind of our biggest advantage today, right? Do you have any tips, right, on folks who are stressed and they need tips to handle their stress other than picking up their phone? Because I seen a study, it was like only 10% of the time when we pick up our phone is when somebody is texting us or reaching out to us. The other 90% is usually just us checking our phone.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that statistic. Well, I mean, there's so many answers that I could give to your question. I mean, that like the answer to that question is literally kind of what we do at Humans First, right? But I'll give you a handful, right, that I think, you know, are very easily doable for most people. So the first, but by the way, these things that I'm about to share with you, I really feel are helpful because I have done hundreds and hundreds of experiments on myself over the last 4 years to determine the ways that technology could be beneficial or detrimental to me. And the reason that I know they work is because I have ADHD and I'm very easily distracted. I have to structure my technology use in a way that really helps me focus, because if I don't, it's very easy for me to lose focus. So I know that these techniques work, but a simple one is this. So I actually was researching this even earlier this week. I really think that one of the worst parts of technology use is when technology negatively impacts your sleep. Because if something, it doesn't matter if it's technology or not, if something negatively impacts your sleep, it impacts everything in your life, because your sleep is when you recover and restore and, you know, you become whole again. And so here's what happens, right? I think most, so let me just give you an example of a simple thing that millions of people around the country are doing every day, and they don't even think about this thing, right? So let's pretend you're going to bed, Josh, it's 10 p.m. and you're like, you know what? I'm just going to check my email one more time because I just want to make sure that there's nothing in my email that I, you know, need to look at. And I've done this too, right? I've done this so many times in the past. So you check your email, it's 10 o'clock, and then you see an email from your boss, and your boss said something that pisses you off. And you're like, oh, so now what do you do, right? You're like, well, you don't want to respond to this email at 10 p.m. because that will tell your boss, oh, I'm checking my email at 10 o'clock and I'm, you know, sending him a signal that I'm available, which no one wants to do that, right? Like, that's not good work-life balance. So if you don't send an email, replying to that, now you're kind of in this emotional state where you're like, you're kind of amped up, right? You're mad. It's your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight system is activated. And so what happens? Well, obviously that first of all puts you in a negative emotional state, which isn't a good thing. But then there's several other things that happen. The first one is you're probably going to go to bed later. And then the other thing is your quality of sleep, whether you realize it or not, is probably going to be worse because you're in this very amped up negative emotional state before you go to bed. So that one simple thing, checking your email for 2 minutes before you go to bed, actually negatively impacts your entire night of sleep and really like makes your whole next day crap because you didn't get this good sleep.
Right.
And so like, if you think about that, I mean, is that really worth it to you to check your email right before you go to bed to risk that? I mean, every person has to kind of ask themselves that question. But to me, it's just that's absolutely not worth it.
I love that you brought that up because I know I've allowed my phone to get in the way of my sleep, whether it's, you know, social media, scrolling through TikTok, or you're thinking about your next day. And so you do allow it to get in the way of your sleep. And it's a great decision to think about, hey, do I check my phone now, or what's going to change from now in me waking up and just checking it tomorrow? Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's huge.
Well, another, I should close the loop on the habit that I think people can do. So what my wife and I did, and she doesn't really do it as much as I do, which is, it is what it is. We sometimes don't see eye to eye on these things, but I just bought a $10 alarm clock from Amazon and I use that to wake up and I would charge my phone in the other room. And so when it's ready, like the other thing that I do in conjunction with this is I have my phone set to turn on do not disturb automatically every night at 9 p.m. because I want to go to bed at 10 p.m. And so my phone screen goes dark. That's my cue to myself. Oh yeah, I need to put the phone on the charger, not be on it, and get ready for bed. And so just that right there, you know, has helped me make this a good habit.
I love that. I love that. So these are a few things because in sleep, lack of sleep also affects your stress levels as well, right? So, man, I know that's something I can get better at. That's why I'm sitting here. I'm like, wow, sleep is something I can definitely get better at. And I know I let my phone get in the way of that. And so, what about exactly mindfulness, technology mindfulness, right? How can folks like in everyday practice, I know you kind of explained it with sleep, but like actually going through the day at work, you know, time with family, right? Hmm. What can folks do to be more mindful and kind of practice that technology mindfulness?
Yeah, I really like your question, Josh. And I would say, you know, just like anything, I mean, that whole process of being more mindful, that's going to be a journey and not a destination. And I literally do this for a living, and there's still things that I occasionally do that I know I shouldn't. And it's just like, okay, well, I need to get better at that or be more deliberate about that. And I guess, excuse me, I would say that those two adjectives being, if you can start to become aware of being deliberate and intentional with your use, that to me is where this journey begins because, excuse me. So, you know, I think it starts with asking yourself, why am I doing this thing on technology right now? Why am I checking my email right now when I just checked it 90 seconds ago? Or why am I on TikTok right now? Is it because I'm bored? Is it because I, need to do it for a business reason? Is it because I want to check up on how my son is doing? I don't know. But when you start asking yourself why, you start to realize there's not really a lot of good reasons for technology, the way we use technology. I mean, sometimes there are, but a lot of times there aren't. And so then when you start asking yourself why, and you're like, oh, like I don't have this great reason, then you start to realize that there's a lot of unnecessary use. And that's when you can decide how you want to change your use.
What do you say to the folks who, you know, I run a company online, right? Or, you know, I use Instagram for business and I need to be on it constantly, or I need to do all these different things. Social media is just a huge part of my life, right? What do you say to folks like that who do?
Yeah, well, so I'll address social media first and then all the other technologies later. So a lot of people say, yeah, I need social media for my business. I totally get that. And I agree. And to be clear, I do think there are good things about social media, but I think it's a tool like anything else. And tools can be good for used for good things or used for bad things. And here's what I would say about that. For the average person, 99% of what you can do on Instagram on your phone, you can do on your computer. So if you really need Instagram, you could just delete it from your phone and be more deliberate and intentional about your use and use it only on your computer or laptop. That's what I've decided for myself, right? I don't have any social media on my phone and I haven't for many years. And then I could still, if I really need to message someone or do whatever, I just go on my computer and that's that, right? So another thing that you could do, though, that's not quite as drastic as deleting it from your phone is to move all your social media apps to the very last page of your apps. That way, you have to scroll a bunch of times to get to them. And you then, again, you have to be more deliberate and intentional. And it's not as convenient to use them on your phone on purpose, right? So that, I think, is also a game changer. By the way, if you do that, if you just move them to the last page or delete them, either one of those, what you'll find is that, in the next week, at least, you will open up your phone so many times and hit the space where you used to have the social media. And you're going to be like, holy crap, I was just on autopilot so many times. This is nuts, right? Like, this is nuts. But the good news is that that only lasts about a week. And all the data shows that after a week, it's smooth sailing. So just if you delete it or move it, I promise you the first week is going to be a little tough. But after that, it won't be that bad. So just stick with it. But to answer your question more about the technology use in general for business owners, I think the main thing that virtually every company that I talk to has not done is this. They have not set written communication guidelines or boundaries for the company. And so, let's pretend that this, so here's what the written communication guidelines would look like. This is just a general example. We expect that all business communications will be answered between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. local time. We would recommend that you only use email for external communication with clients, and we use Slack for internal communication with employees. We expect that all client emails will be answered within 24 business hours. We expect that all internal Slack messages will be answered within 3 business hours. If there's something that requires more urgency than 3 hours, we expect that employees will give each other a Slack phone call and that Slack phone calls will be answered immediately. So let's pretend if you're a business owner, you had those standards written down and then you sent them to all your employees and clients. Now it completely changes how everyone does their job, because instead of checking email and Slack once every 6 minutes, like the average person does, now they give themselves permission to check them once every couple hours, and then they're not distracting themselves and they can focus and do the stuff that's really important for their job.
Wow. So putting boundaries on folks early. So that they're not disappointed about, you know, lack of response or whatever the case may be. Right. Kind of having a working agreement in a sense, right? No, I love that. And I think more folks should do that. And matter of fact, I think more folks should do that in their personal life too. Like, hey, I wish it could be like an automatic message I can send. Hey, I won't be answering this text message after 9 p.m.
Yeah.
But no, being able to set your own boundaries for yourself, for your own technology, I think would be key as well. So winding down, right? What can folks, what would you love to leave folks with today, like around technology, mindfulness, or I guess anything? We've shared about it quite a bit, more than just technology, mindfulness, right? What would you leave listeners with, you know, moving forward in their days?
Yeah, I mean, I really think that this is a concept that is so important to my wife and I that we share this with people during a toast at our wedding. And we believe that the amount of love, success, and happiness in this world are infinite. And so imagine how much love, success, and happiness we could all have together if we all decided to put humans first.
Wow. And it's crazy. And what most folks don't realize is that we all can share our gifts together. I have something to give to you. You have something to give to me, but we need to interact with each other.
Right.
As opposed to our devices and our technology. And it's just not the same. No. Reaching out to an old friend on social media or through text is just not the same as actually seeing them out in person randomly. Right. It's a hug. It's a like, oh my God, you know?
Yep.
It's been a long time. And so I know for me, I'm going to definitely be more intentional with my technology and actually getting around people. And that started today, getting a chance to chat with you.
All right.
They get a chance to chat with you. So where can people find Rob at to learn more about his journey, learn more about Humans First, and just get in contact with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys can check out Humans First on my website. It's humansfirst.us. And then one other thing I wanted to offer to the listeners, Josh, is a free 30-minute technology consultation call with me. And so if you want to redeem that, all you have to do is just email me. My email address is rob@humansfirst.us. Just email me there and mention this podcast, and I'm happy to give you a free 30-minute consultation to chat with me about your technology mindfulness.
100%. Yes. Please take advantage of that. I mean, that's huge, right? 30 minutes customized where you get the chance to sit down with somebody and say, hey, you know, you struggle with this and we can actually help you with that. So Rob, I thank you a ton for giving that gift to my audience. And, I would love for them to reach out to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Josh. Really appreciate the opportunity and grateful to be with you here today.
100%. I got a lot of value. And I know the audience did too. So I appreciate you.
Thanks so much, man.
Our brand design and strategy is by Tessa at 5footstudios.com. You can also follow her on Instagram at 5footstudios. Our music is by Lakey Inspired. Go ahead and subscribe so that you never miss an episode, and click the 5 stars to give us a rating. And most importantly, keep playing injured.